D-Hop?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it sounds like you were breaking up a little bit, though.
Oh, nah. I'm about to say, to my point, dog, Florida State just wasn't very good, man. Let's be real about that, first of all.
Bro, we just started the podcast.
Yeah, we started the podcast. Straight up. Like, that looked good, but Florida State just wasn't that good, man. For Syracuse,
hold on. We ain't got no intro, dog.
Nah, we need an intro. Intro then, dog.
D, do the intro.
Cause I got some shit on my chest, bro.
Sound like it.
Well, that's also the reason we went down in the rankings this week. A lot of teams jumped us.
Yeah, because we ain't really untested.
Yep. So
all right, that Florida State joint ain't got no weight, man. So, cause Syracuse beat them better than we did.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's be real about some things now.
I think we exposed them. We took their heart. They second guessing themselves right now. That's what that is, bro.
That's true.
Man, I think they just wasn't never that good.
See, I think they got good players though.
Yeah, they definitely got good players. They definitely got more stars. You know what I'm saying? As far as five stars and four stars, absolutely.
I'm telling you, they just not disciplined like when Jimbo was there. Jimbo had them playing as a team. Taggart have them as like a and one team. Like just a, hey, everybody do their thing, and if it all click, we good. If not, at least we stunting. Like that's how I feel they on right now. You ain't going to win like that.
Bro, them jokers barely beat Samford, didn't they?
Yeah. And
hey, Samford receiver was nice, though. It couldn't nobody on the field check, oh boy. Like, whenever he wanted to go over top, he was going over top on like five different DBs, though.
Really?
So y'all think we overrated that?
Nah, look, we put up 62. I know it's William and Mary, but they have Tech put up 62 points, though. Like,
We ain't overrated. I just think we haven't been tested yet. And so it's kind of hard to gauge because we thought Florida State was going to be a test. Florida State turns out to not be as good as we thought, so that really wasn't a test. And so that's all I'm saying. Like,
I think so would you give Tech their respect if they do their thing against Notre Dame?
Absolutely. That would mean as much as I thought about Florida State, that would mean almost even more than that. Because I know Notre Dame got players. And that's all I want to see Tech do. I want to see Tech be able to compete with the schools that got players.
Yeah. So, you know, we took a couple weeks off or a week off in between our last podcast. We appreciate
it. I never took a week off. First of all, Eddie was here the whole time ready to go. Well, Brandon Flowers took a week off.
We're gonna blame it on Hurricane Florence and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But we appreciate everybody tuning in. We had over 3,000, you know, listens and a bunch of great feedback. We hope everyone who went through the hurricane is safe. Jumping in, you know, kind of what you guys were just discussing, you know, Willie Taggart, not to dwell on Florida State, but, you know, you see UCLA, you see all these new coaches kind of going through it right now. What are your thoughts on just the landscape of college football? Because I told Brandon that I think there are legitimately five teams competing for the playoffs right now. Like, I don't – everybody else is an afterthought almost.
I mean, I think it's hard anytime you – a new coach and come to a new team and try to implement your way of thinking, your playbook and everything, and – I was impressed with Texas A&M in a way that they played Clemson, just because, I mean, it's the same thing, a new head coach, a new philosophy, and we all know how good Clemson is or is supposed to be. And for Texas A&M to come in and play the way that they did, you got to give Jimbo a lot of credit for getting them boys ready to go. But as far as these other head coaches, man, they got to do a better job of what they're doing. I mean, Taggart came in with high expectations, and he just hadn't lived up to them. And so that's where I asked the question on my Twitter account was like, is three games not enough. Is that early enough to be on a hot seat? And I think that it is, because for him to come in with so much hype, so much expectations, Florida State about to be back to where they was, and it's been such a letdown. Even me just being a college football fan, I don't like seeing Florida State not being a good football team. It's just not good for the ACC, and it's not good for college football.
No, so, you're right.
These coaches got to do a better job and really step up. You look around the league, and the NFL is never an issue about calling out a player when they're not performing well. Well, we need to call these coaches out. They grown men. These ain't kids out there. They getting paid a lot of money to come and perform and do a good job, and they just haven't done that.
But to the and somebody can jump in after this. You know, I saw Scott Van Pelt last night. He was saying, you know, 3 games is too soon to put somebody on the hot seat, because it takes a while to build something up, but it can be torn down overnight. You know, it's almost like your reputation or whatever. You know, it take you a lifetime to build it. One bad incident, you know, and now your name can be tarnished or something like that. So do you think we just need to be patient, you know, and give these guys time to really implement their culture?
You have to be patient, man. Well, I think Eddie and Brent, I think what y'all forgetting in D-Hawk is that these are not professional athletes. These are kids. They're implementing a whole new system. These kids are not executing their new system as they should be right now. They still don't. Florida State don't even know if Francois is the guy to run that different system that Taggart brought in. You know, like, Taggart still has to bring in his guys that he feel like he needs to recruit to run the system that he runs. He still has jumbo guys, and I know it can go both ways. If they winning, he's winning with jumbo guys, but he can't be on the hot seat after 3 games because a lot of those guys aren't guys he brought in. They might not fit his system. And just how he has to get to know those players and see what's their strengths and their weaknesses, the players still trying to figure out themselves. I guarantee you these players still second-guessing themselves on, am I running the right route? Hey, I'm not going to check out of this play because I barely know how to get the whole, you know, the concept down, the call to play. Not only execute it, I just got to know what I'm doing on this play. So they're not audible in and feeling so comfortable into this playbook how they would be if they've been in the system 3 or 4 years. So that has a lot to do.
Yeah, see, Brandon, I get where you're coming from, and I wouldn't have no issue with that, with giving them time. But you seeing him dancing around, talking a lot of trash. Like it, like you said before, there's no discipline right now. Like, he's not showing any discipline as a coach. Like, I don't think you act like that.
Yeah. And
you could tell the discipline issue with the team when you watch him play. So the fact that the coach dancing around and partying, like, he having a good time, that make me think that, all right, they ready to go.
But you know what? You know what, Eddie? To his defense, that's who he is. That's who he's always been. This guy didn't just put on the front and get the job and start acting like this. He was that guy in South Florida. Was he at South Florida? You see,
yeah, he was at South Florida.
South Florida, all right. He was that guy at South Florida. He was that guy at Oregon, and he's still that guy here at Florida State. And
bro, so you can't tell me he was dancing in Oregon.
I mean, he wasn't. It wasn't as publicized as it is now.
Okay,
he's from Florida. Let's turn up. You know what I mean? And so that kind of gets magnified a little more. He didn't have Deion Sanders coming back to, you know, mm-hmm. Oregon and kicking it with him and really showing how much Willie Taggart is in touch with this, you know, with the hip hop culture. He didn't have that in Oregon. And so, you know, this guy definitely needs time. You know, the same reason we told, or the same reason I said about Fuente really, really coming into his own because he's starting to get his recruits in. You know, you heard Dot say the same thing. We gotta be patient with this guy because we have to see what his program looks like with his guys. I know that president over there at the university and all those boosters who voted for this guy to be the, you know, the next head football coach didn't expect it to start like this. I know they expected him to be able to win with some of Jimbo guys, but at the same time, I think they also understand that it's gonna take a while. You know what I mean? It's going to take a little bit of time for this guy to really get the guys he feels he needs to win a national championship with. And so I think they, at the end of the day, have ultimate understanding that his ability to be a good football coach didn't just disappear. It's just, it's going to take a little bit of time. And that's kind of really how I feel about it. I think he is a good coach. And I think I would have liked to have played for him. But some guys can't play for a coach who's that loose and that much fun to be around, especially college kids. You said these aren't pro athletes. These are college kids who need structure, who as in some instances is the first time they're getting a father figure around them besides in a football coach that they've had in high school and now in college. And so, you know, this, you know, he has to be a good role model as well as a good football coach. And, you know, I think he can definitely do that.
And I think one of the things – I think I was speaking to Brandon about it yesterday that, you know, Virginia Tech got, we were fortunate. I'm not going to say we were lucky, but we were definitely fortunate that Fuente has come in and hit the ground running, because I don't know if our fan base would have had the same patience. You know, I think we're in the age of social media and blogs and everyone has an opinion. And
well, you know what? You know what, too? I don't mean to cut you off, B, but – a lot of things, too, with our transition from Coach Beamer to Coach Fuente, man, it was so smooth. At most universities, it does not happen like that. The transition of power is never smooth as it was with us. It's coaches that left either forced out or it's coaches that got fired and don't have a really good team. Coach Beamer had a really good team, you know what I mean? These guys were going to be upperclassmen for Coach Beamer implementing his system and his scheme. And so Fuente was very lucky in a sense of he had players who were ready to play and ready to win ball games and had won ball games prior to him even getting there. And so he kept the coordinator. Like, the way our transition to power went, it doesn't happen like that 9 out of 10 times. It's some people in the organization that aren't really on board with the new move, no matter what it might be. And so I think our situation was so much more different than 95% of other programs in the country when they go through a changing of a head coach.
Well, I read that article that they put out about it. It was a great article, and Whit Babcock did a great job with handling the transition of getting Coach Fuente and Coach Foster on the same page before it was official. Like, because that's something that you had to – I mean, Coach Foster is a legend at Virginia Tech, as we all know. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he didn't get the head coaching job was out there. It was on people's minds. And were they going to be able to work together? I think Coach Fuente and Coach Beamer are similar in the fact that hard work, being disciplined, respecting your teammates, respecting people on the campus, just the way that they carry themselves and their values, they're so similar – that I think it made that transition a lot easier. When you look at Coach Taggart and Jimbo Fisher, I mean, they're polar opposites in my opinion. Jimbo's so hard-nosed and so disciplined, and then you go to Taggart, who's so loose. I mean, that kind of falls on the AD and those guys making the decision about hiring the coach. It's like, you got to understand that these are kids, and they do need discipline. So some people are better off as offensive coordinators and not head coaches. I'm not saying that that's the case with Taggart, but a lot of the times, to be a head coach, you got to be disciplined. You look at the teams, the programs that are winning in Alabama, Nick Saban is all about discipline and hard work. You look at Clemson, Dabo, he had fun. He be dancing too, but it's all about hard work and discipline. Yeah. So I think that's got to be the focus of your program, is because they are kids. They don't know what it takes to win a national championship.
I think what you're talking about, Eddie, is culture. You know, I tweeted out the night of the game that, you know, Willie Taggart doesn't have Florida State doesn't have a culture right now. And that's what you're talking about. Willie Taggart didn't align with the culture at Florida State that Jimbo had built versus what Fuente came in and he inherited a program that had a culture that was similar to what he believed in, his values.
And like Eddie mentioned before with Whit Babcock, the AD, I feel like he did do a great job of the transition phase, even for, like you said, keeping Coach Foster there, but even guys who was Beamer's understudy, his first in line, John Boleyn, he kept him around. He kept guys around that facility to make sure those guys who stayed just felt like your old coaches aren't just out of here and they gone and forgotten about. This is a family. We can't keep everybody around, but we'll keep some around so you guys can know this family. You'll see familiar faces. And on defense side of the ball, they're running the same defense. They kept Coach Charlie Wiles, who's who I feel is the best D-line coach in the nation. And that's what a transition did help at, like Eddie said. It's just like a part of that Beamer phase is there. And I feel like Coach Fuente, he almost even just came in as an offensive coordinator. He's a head coach, but he just brought his offense to Virginia Tech, which needed an upgrade at the time. And Coach Fuente, he's just not a control freak, but he does have control. Whereas, hey, I want you guys to keep it like it was before. I like what you guys were doing before, but I'm going to also take it up a notch and let you guys know what I feel like can put you over that line and get you a national championship. So I think everybody at Virginia Tech just worked well together on that transition.
Yeah, it was no ego. It was no ego involved with anybody, and that's that was good to see, in my opinion. B, I think we ought to touch on the William & Mary game briefly. I mean, what we saw being there, or what I saw and we talked about a little bit, was our offense, and we wish we would go down the field a little bit more. Being there, I you mentioned it the week before, and I kind of wasn't on your side about that. But then after seeing it up close, I understand what you mean. It's a lot of bubbles. It's a lot of stuff going horizontally instead of vertically. And then when you watch some of the other programs, they're attacking down the field. And I feel like we do need to do more of that. And I'm hoping that we will, because you watch Hazleton. He had a double move, a long touchdown pass that he caught on the sideline. And, I mean, he just killed the DB. So it's there for us to be able to do it. I just want to see more of it. And so hopefully going forward, William & Mary was no test for us. I mean, but hopefully that gave us some confidence to throw more balls down the field to get these receivers more opportunities.
And I feel like it'll come in strides. Don't show everything right now. Like, we don't need to show that we have downfield vertical threats right now against William & Mary and then this week ODU. Keep doing what we're doing. Get the win. Get out of there. When Notre Dame come, that's when you attack vertically. They haven't seen that before. They go preparing for slants, screens, misdirection draws. Like, nah, when they start getting hit vertically, then it's going to be too late. So I'm thinking, hopefully, you know, Coach Fuente know what they're doing. Not too showing too much on film, because these are games that we are going to win. So let's not put too much on film with these new weapons we have so they can get a beat on and, you know, prepare for it.
I feel exactly what you're saying, but I can't think back to when, like Eddie said, that they throwing the ball downfield. You have to, especially in college football, the way the rules are and the way games are being played, you got to score points. You got to make big plays. You can't just expect college kids to go on 12 and 15 play drives by throwing bubble screens. Like, you have to take shots. You have to get big plays. And I would definitely love to see this offense do a lot more of that, because just thinking back over the last couple of years since Coach Fuente has been there, I can't recall when they just did that.
Yeah. So this is my next question. I mean, I will look at the film more in depth now, look at the games more in depth. How much it is of Josh Jackson not going downfield? Because now that Florida State game, I seen a couple one-on-one opportunities. And I wanted to tell the receiver, to tell the quarterback, just, hey, tell him throw it up. You go come down with it. But I don't want to get involved with them talking to their quarterback and demanding certain things. Like, they had one-on-one opportunities where they was running routes downfield. How much does it come on to Josh Jackson not just throwing the ball downfield? Have we studied that into depth? Did you see that when you was there, Eddie?
Yeah, I saw that. It was like, it was all game plan. And he took his shots when they were there. I think they wanted to be aggressive a little bit against William & Mary. He wanted to be We even saw the punt returner fumble a punt return because he wanted to make a play. I mean, it was William and Mary. Everybody wanted to get their stats up against William and Mary. So I think if the play would have been called to go downfield, he would have done it, especially against them. But it was just the system. You know what I mean? We given Savoy a lot of carries going sideways. And I know that that's the new wave of football. And Coach Fuente, I mean, he's a genius as far as it comes on offense, the offensive side of the ball. That's why it was hard for me to question anything that he was doing. And I'm definitely still not. I'm just saying, I think we have the weapons to attack downfield. Like, I'm actually excited about the receivers that we have and the quarterback that we got, because I know what they could do vertically. And now I just want to see it. And I don't want to just see it against Notre Dame, because it takes practice.
Exactly.
Like, as a receiver and a quarterback, you got to get that down.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's going to be the back shoulder go ball. It ain't always going to be just the over the top one when you got the guy beat by 5 yards. So that takes work, live practice. And I don't want them waiting until Notre Dame to try to do that.
Yep. I agree with that 100%. And, you know, we have Old Dominion this weekend. Looking at the schedule, looking forward. We have Duke the following weekend, who everyone, you know, Eddie, when we were in Blacksburg, everyone seemed to be afraid of Duke for some reason or another. But I think they've lost their starting quarterback and some other starters, so we should be able to handle them. So the schedule is lining up for Notre Dame to be, you know, the next big test. And then we have a stretch where we go Boston College, Pitt, Miami. You know, I mean, looking at the schedule, honestly, I don't see any reason why we can't run the table and finish the season undefeated. What do you guys – who are you guys seeing as a big obstacle coming through?
I think, personally, Pitt always played tough football, or they played Virginia Tech tough. For some reason, that matchup just always gives Virginia Tech problems. Boston College, just because they're so balanced. I mean, yeah, they didn't look that good against Wake, but I feel the way Virginia Tech is playing, everybody's going to give Virginia Tech their best shot. So when you have a run game that's hard to stop like Boston College, and the quarterback, he's playing real good football right now. Don't sleep on that three-game stretch with Boston College and Pitt and then Miami right after. We all know Miami is Miami. They come into Blacksburg. They do have athletes. I feel like they're weak at the quarterback spot. But if he just have that game where he's on, they have playmakers all around him that can make plays. So I think that's going to be a tough little stretch, tougher than what people think those three games should be for Virginia Tech.
Do you think we can run the table, though, Brandon?
I definitely think we can run the table if we stay focused, and I think we will run the table just because we have a lot of young guys playing that don't know any better. They don't know about looking over opponents yet. You know, they still haven't – there's still some of their third and fourth starts coming up, so they still happy to just play football and go try to dominate out there. They don't know about – you know, as opposed to we having, like, the Edmonds brothers there and Alexander there still, like, who can kind of look over teams on the schedule. I think these young guys, they just excited to play. And that's what I think about the tables.
Yeah, they're excited for the opportunity. I think they can run the table, but, I mean, we can't even talk about running the table till we see what they look like against Duke, who's probably the earliest test. Till we see what they look like against Notre Dame. To even think about running the table for those games, Pitt, Boston College, and Miami, which we know are going to be tough games, we got to make it to that point. But, yeah, if this team can stay focused and play every game, like not necessarily like it's their last game, but play every game like it's the most important game and not look ahead, absolutely they can run the table. But it all starts with Duke and Notre Dame. Like, you have to show up and you have to be able to – be consistent and do some of the same things you did against a Florida State team who we're starting to figure out really just wasn't that good. So that will be the first real test is Duke. And we don't perceive them to be any world beaters. But when you get Notre Dame, like, that's a football team who plays top-level competition. And you know if you match up well against those guys and ultimately come out with a win, you can absolutely start saying to yourself, man, if we take it one game at a time, we can run the table.
Yeah. What do you think, Eddie?
I'm looking at the schedule. I mean, it's a couple scary games on there just because the teams are pretty good. And I did like Boston College coming into the season because that running back is so good. But I'm looking at Georgia Tech, a team that we lost to last year, that you look at the schedule and you're like, we shouldn't lose to them, but we did. And stopping that triple option, whatever you want to call it, we've had issues with that. And then, Brendan, you could speak on it too. We was on the field and we was watching. We didn't tackle very well against William and Mary. And so that's something that we got to improve also. And so with Georgia Tech running that misdirection and never knowing where the ball is and then all of a sudden throwing a deep ball down the field, it's like you got a young secondary and we struggle tackling a little bit against William and Mary. So I think Georgia Tech is a team that we really got to focus on and make sure that we play them well. Because that's a night game. They're going to be ready to go. And that quarterback they got, I mean, he's got potential to be a ACC player of the year, in my opinion. He's just got that type of talent. So that's one of the games that needs to be circled and one that we need to watch out for. Because in years past, it's been games that we should win that we didn't win. Yeah. That kind of hurt us and hurt our rankings towards the end of the year.
Hey, Eddie, let me cut you off for a second. You're absolutely right about Georgia Tech. I mean, you sit back and think about the NFL caliber talent they had on their defense last year. Tim Settle, the Edmonds brothers, Strowman, Adonis. Yep. Yeah, you sit and think about the talent they had on that roster last year that are on NFL rosters right now. And if you didn't win that game last year and had all that talent, it's some young ballers they got, but young ballers versus experienced veterans. You know what I mean?
Yeah. True. Georgia Tech.
That to me, Eddie is absolutely right. I totally overlooked Georgia Tech. I totally wasn't even thinking about that aspect of it until he brought it up.
Yeah, those young guys handling, you know, the cut blocks and just their assignment, playing assignment.
Because you have to be assignment perfect. You have to be so disciplined. And just most young guys, they want to try to make that play. You know, they want to try to make it to help the team, but they don't really know how to just do your job. If you just do your job and is trying to stop that triple option, everybody has to just do their job. Because if one guy doesn't do his job, it hits for a long run.
Yeah. And I think what Brandon said is, you know, kind of brings it all back to focus is these young guys, it's a gift and a curse. They also don't know any better other than doing what they've been coached to do and doing their assignment, you know, whereas some of those older guys might want to do it their way, you know, and that sort of thing. So we'll see what the schedule kind of entails, but, you know, I'm excited to keep the podcast going so we can kind of, you know, watch this team grow and develop. One of the things I want to, you know, touch on before we wrap up is transitioning. You know, we've seen a lot of Hokies in the NFL making their debuts, the Edmonds brothers. What was it like for you guys starting off your NFL careers as rookies, you know, making that transition from Virginia Tech to pro-style football? What was that like for you guys?
To be honest, for me, it wasn't as hard as a transition because of the culture, Coach Foster. What he expected out of you of a player, it kind of prepared me for the NFL. Like, Coach Foster, like, with him, you're going to correct your own mistakes before he has to correct it because you don't want to have to come to the sideline and hear what he has to say. They breed hard, tough, smart football players at Virginia Tech. So when I got to the league, I policed myself. My first day of training camp, I was a starter. And I didn't have no nerves at all because I didn't even know how to be nervous. I was ready for the big moment. I wanted that big stage. Like, that's what I wanted, you know. So coming from that environment, playing in front of that crowd at Virginia Tech, it wasn't – no NFL stadium's going to get loud as Virginia Tech, really. Maybe two. Maybe Kansas City, Seattle. Maybe one more here and there, but – I think just playing at Virginia Tech, playing for Coach Bud Foster, you got to be assignment point, like, all the time. I think that helped me prepare. That prepared me to just be a great NFL pro. And it wasn't too tough of a transition, to be honest with me.
What about you, D?
You want me to go? Yeah. I mean, for me, I kind of echo the same thing Flower said, man. At the end of the day, when I left Tech, I was so ready. I was ready from a standpoint of what was expected of me. I was ready from a standpoint of technique work that I got from my DB coach and understanding and learning and growing in football. I was ready when it came from a standpoint of even being selfless, man, like giving up yourself for the team. Like, nobody as a starter wants to jump on special teams. But because when you're at Tech, you understand that everyone does it. It's the way of life for a lot of guys who make it in the NFL. You're asked to play special teams. And a lot of guys I've seen not make it because they've been divas and hadn't wanted to play special teams. And just even though I was a high draft pick, that was still instilled in me from the jump to give of yourself for the team, man. It's little things like that that we learned from Virginia Tech that we were able to take to the next level. And it just made us that much better of pros. And, I mean, I know myself personally, I owe it all to Virginia Tech. I owe it to those coaches who taught me, you know, not only technique work, but taught me how to handle my business and be a man off the field as well. And so, I mean, it was so many instrumental life lessons I learned from Coach Steinspring and Coach Foster, Coach Ward, even Coach Cav back in the day. Coach Ball was my receivers coach when I got to go over there a little bit. And so, I mean, it was just so much information that I was able to get from those coaches, man, that just, you know, helped me be a better person and a better football player.
Yeah. What about you, Daddy?
Yeah, I think I felt the same way. I mean, it's kind of funny. We all was able to come in and play right away. And that was something that I benefited a lot from at Virginia Tech, was the special teams aspect of it, that I was able to return kicks and punts and play receiver. So I was able to come in and touch the ball a lot as a rookie. And that's all because what I learned at Virginia Tech and just the mentality of it. I think the wave of when we were there playing, we had so many like pros in college. Like, we attacked the game in a professional manner, and the fact that we studied extra film, we studied each other, we got each other better. Like, we all had the common goal of wanting to get to the league, and you could tell that by the way that we prepared. And so we did coach ourselves, we pushed each other. So when I got to the NFL, I felt like I was already NFL ready, and just based on the guys that I had been practicing against.
Yeah.
So I gotta give you, Dot, a lot of credit for that, for getting me ready for the league. And so when I got to the league, it really wasn't no surprises. I mean, the playbook was a little bit bigger, but other than that, it really wasn't no issues.
I mean,
and so
yeah.
So that's where I'm at. We just attacked it so hard. It meant so much to us in college that when we got to the league, nothing really changed.
Yeah. But what do you think about – what do you think these young guys are facing? D-Hall, you know, you're the most recent retiree, but what did you see from maybe the younger guys in the locker room as you were towards the end of your career? How did they handle, you know, the social media now and Instagram? And, you know, all three of you guys are kind of chill when it comes to that sort of stuff, but this new generation, you know – they could maybe be putting their focus in the wrong place, especially before they get stable off the field, before they realize the NFL is a business, before they get married and have kids and kind of settle their personal life down.
Yeah, I mean, that's a generational difference between us and them. But different guys were different. You know, I've had some young guys who wasn't on it much, and I've had other young guys who were always on it. So it doesn't make you a great player or not make you a great player. You just still have to put that quality time in into your craft. Like with anything, if you want to be great in anything, you have to put time into it. And so what I did notice was guys from Virginia Tech, because I was able to have two young guys, two rookies, as DBs, were really three. If you take back when I was in Atlanta, I had Jimmy Williams as a rookie. And then you take in D.C., I had Kendall Fuller and I had Kyshawn Jarrett. And just seeing the way that those guys approached the game the same way I did, the same seriousness, but knew how to have fun, but knew when it was time to talk football, like those guys weren't just great DBs. They were football players, man. And I'm a big proponent of, at the end of the day, I'd rather have a football player than a great corner or a great receiver. I want a great football player. And I think that's what Virginia Tech breeds, man. They breed dudes who are football players and understand how to play football and X's and O's and understand schematically because they're demanded to know that by their coaches along their journey, man. A lot of kids in college aren't held to the standard we were held to as far as learning what we're supposed to do.
Schematically. I think you're getting at something. I think guys are coming into the league not as prepared to play, especially at the receiver position. I think is because of the offenses that they're running. They're not running a whole lot of routes that are running the NFL these days. It's a lot of bubble screens. It's a lot of slant routes. It's a lot of stuff that don't really translate to the NFL. So those guys aren't really necessarily getting the route running skills that they need to transition to the NFL. So that's kind of what I was noticing with guys coming in, that it took them a little bit longer to learn those things. And that affects the quarterback also, I think. The social media does affect the kids these days, because that's kind of all they talk about. My nephews, all they talk about, how many followers you got, how many this, how many that. So it's on their mind a little bit more. But when I was down at Virginia Tech, I was able to meet Hazleton, our wide receiver, Damon Hazleton, and I talked to him for a quick second, but it only took about 10 seconds for me to realize that he thought like we did when we was in college. Like, he had like a pros mentality of, I just want to get better every day. And he said that within the first five things we talked about. I mean, the first five words he said to me was, I just want to get better every day. I want to push myself to be the best receiver I could be. And so after he told me that, I was like, this dude got it. Like, I think he's going to leave and be the best player he could be leaving Virginia Tech, because mentally he's got it. And that just made me feel so much better about our program and where we're headed with the type of guys we got, to hear him say that, being in this social media age to where it's all about me. He was like, I just want to come here and get a team all that I got and be the best player I could be. So that was great to hear.
Yeah, that is.
Me personally, I think making that transition from college to the NFL, it all depends on who the young guys look at as their OG. Who is the vet they look at to model themselves by? When I was in the locker room, like D. Hall, those boys from Virginia Tech, they had a great OG in yourself to see how to prepare. That's the first thing they seen. So that was all they knew coming into the league. Like, I got to study. I got to get better. Like you said, I have my fun, but I know when it's time to lock in for football, that's all I know. And I seen some guys come in the league where they kind of tried to model themselves by somebody who they thought, you know, was the man, like his social media popping. He just want to play all the new songs in the locker room, and he want to dance, and he want to wear the chains. And the young guys are not realizing this guy already played 6 years in the league, and he already signed for $70 million, and that's why he acts like that. Like, you don't have to come in and do the same thing and be yourself. They're like, hey, like, I'm dancing too, and nah, I'm not staying after the day, man. Hey, I'm going to such and such house. We about to hang out. And, like, it depends on who these young guys want to follow and model themselves after in the league. I feel like if they come in the league and model themselves after an OG who does it the right way, most of the time they turn out all right. But once these guys come in and try to model themselves off of somebody who doesn't have good study habits, have good practice habits, and try to do things the way they do it, thinking that their talent is the same as the guy that they're trying to model themselves after, those guys be out of the league in 2-3 years, no matter when they're drafted. You got to learn how to be a pro yourself. It's you, your own business. You can't worry about what this other guy doing unless he's doing positive things, and you can see why he's been in the league a long time.
Dang,
so you have to be a man, and you have to know who to model yourself after.
Quick question, Brandon. How true is that story about you going to a Lil Wayne concert with Todd Haley?
I mean, it's true. It was off the. It was after practice. It was a concert. I mean, we put our work in. Todd Haley, he enjoyed Lil Wayne just like I did.
Was he the head coach at that time, or he was the OC?
Yes.
Nah, he was the head coach. But I mean, hey, it was Lil Wayne's tour. Lil Wayne was the hottest rapper at the time. Brought both of us out on stage. Held up my jersey. Me and Ty Haley was on stage having a good time.
Oh, that's tight.
Yeah. When we got back in the next day, we was ready to go to work. But, hey, we can have fun when it's time to have fun, like D. Hall said. That's you can tight. Work hard, but just play hard.
Yeah, it's funny because he brought that up on Hard Knocks. I think he had a Lil Wayne song as their highlight song for the opening preseason game on Hard Knocks. So, Ty Haley is a legit Lil Wayne fan. Yeah, but
that's what's up, man. Ty Haley ain't that much old, man. You know, he ain't that old.
Man, yeah. Ty Haley a cool dude, a good dude. And that's what I like about him. Everything you hear about him, like, man, he's a hard coaster. Like, nah, he just demands perfection out of his receivers. That's why he yelling at him all the time. Line up here, you need to catch that because he wants perfection. Yeah. But when he's out of there, he knows how to enjoy himself, and he likes what he likes. So, myself, I can relate to a guy like that, man. I like Ty Haley.
Hey, B, I might take it the podcast a little going in a different direction. But
why are you going in a different direction?
Because it's just happening. They can cut it off if they want. You know what I'm saying? So...
You've been listening to This Is Home podcast featuring D'Angelo Hall, Eddie Royal, and Brandon Flowers. We're not done yet. Stick around for the next segment.
Hey, B, I might take it the podcast a little going in a different direction, but
why are you going in a different direction?
Because it's just happening. They can cut it off if they want. You know what I'm saying? So I went to the Bears Seahawks game last night in Chicago, and Khalil Mack, boy, before the trade, I'm like, I don't know about giving up 2 first round draft picks and $100-something million. But after seeing that dude live in person, I get it. The Bears made the right call.
Bro, they say he like that, man.
But listen, this is what I tried to tell B Hill. I said, B, because B told me he wouldn't pay that much for Khalil Mack because you can't pay the rest of your team.
But Nah.
That's what I told him. I'm like, B, he's special. You're not going to get too many Khalil Macks because, as you can see, they try to trip him with a receiver. Then they try to block him with a tackle. Then they have the guard to come over and try to block him also, and he beat all 3 of them and get a sack. So when you got 3 people occupied trying to block one edge rusher, first off, everybody else on the D-line got 1-on-1. Somebody got to win. And plus, whoever that safety is or that corner is, that's guarding the receiver that got a chip. He got a down off. So that's making your defense a successful rate that much greater.
Nah,
you got the game plan for this guy every game, every snap. So that's why he's worth that money.
Yeah, nah. I'm a big fan of Khalil Mack because somebody was like, oh, he's just a pass rusher. I said, man, if they really want to get gangster with it, when Khalil is in this defense and he understands it, and Vic Fangio is a great D coordinator. He had them San Fran defenses that had Alden Smith, Patrick
Brooks.
Willis,
yeah,
Ahmad Brooks, Navarro Bowman. So he knows how to put these guys in position to make plays. But I was like, what people don't realize is Khalil Mack is a great enough athlete, and he was an All-Pro at middle linebacker too. So you could potentially, when he gets gangster in that defense, say, hey, Khalil, we don't really need you as an outside backer on first down. Won't you go be our mic? But they did draft Roquan Smith, who was another stud.
And
don't really have that problem.
And Trevathan.
Yeah, but Trevathan, I think they're going to end up not wanting to keep his contract because they paid him from Denver 2 years ago, I think.
But he's a really good
He player. Is, but I don't know versus the money. And like
they,
I said,
they'll replace him with Rolando Smith, though.
You think so, Raekwon? I thought Raekwon was running the mic.
Well, I seen when Trevathan got hurt week 1. That's when they brought in Smith. So
yeah, okay.
But But then they played side by side last night. So.
Okay, so they still trying to work it out, see how they gonna do it. But
yeah, bro, that defense is good, man. Like John Gruden, I don't know what the hell he was thinking, man. It ain't no way. Hey, man, I'm walking in there. Hey, man, get that deal done.
But D-Hall, like,
bro, you just D-Hall, gave me $100 million. You better pay that, man.
But they're gonna take up 30% of your cap.
Man, they ain't 30% of your cap, dog.
Him and Carr.
Derek Carr. Yeah.
Well, Derek Carr don't look that great either. I saw Derek Carr in person against us, and I was a fan of his until I seen us killing him. And yeah, I'm like,
but what I told Brandon,
I probably wouldn't have gave Derek Carr that much money. Yeah. But the blueprint is.
Hello?
The blueprint is get a young receiver. A young quarterback on his.
Like the Rams
build around him, man. That's the blueprint. Anything else is foolish, unless you're New England and you're getting a deal for your quarterback.
Well, a lot of people had to, you know, are blaming Russell Wilson for the reason the Seahawks are bad because of his contract. Even you know,
well, some people blaming Russ for that because his money. But at the end of the day, everybody I've talked to is blaming Pete Carroll that the message just gets stale. Like it happened at USC. It happened, I think, a place before USC.
New England.
And now it's happening now. And so Pete has about an 8, 7 to 10 year shelf life. And then people get tired of him saying the same message. And then they were saying Pete was contradicting himself because he come in there talking about this and that. And then he lost the locker room when he decided to not make Marshawn Lynch the MVP by running the ball. He wanted to throw it and let Russ become the MVP. Yeah. He lost that locker room then. It ain't because they paid Russ. Yeah. Russ a beast. If anything, they doing Russ a disservice because they ain't got no old linemen out there. For a while, they was drafting D linemen and making them offensive linemen.
Yeah. And then they paid Dwayne. Shout out to Virginia Tech Hokie, Dwayne Brown, holding down the left side. But another thing I noticed is Mac rushes against right tackle. And not to blame them for their scheme, but I'm just like, when he's one-on-one against a left tackle, he don't do nothing. Like,
he do whatever he want to do.
I'm telling
you. You reaching with that one, bro.
I'm serious. He doesn't rush against left tackle. If you watched him last night, he lined up against the right tackle all night.
But you got to know, too, he plays the run so well. That's what people lose sight of. He's one of the best run defenders in the league, too.
Eddie,
so
he averages three tackles a game.
Bro, look it up. I'm telling you, he's one of the best run defenders in the game.
And Eddie, what I try to tell B is, I'm like, B always talk about, oh, he had such and such sacks and such tackles, but I'm like, he's a game wrecker. He'll wreck everything else, and somebody else will make the tackle. He'll take up 2 and 3 blocks, and somebody else will make the tackle.
I get
that.
So
it's just, I mean, like, you don't even want to run to him because he'll shed the block so easy. And just make the tackle, so he'll run the other way.
Man, the numbers don't lie. That man numbers better than Oakland's whole defense right now, single-handedly.
But DeAndre, let me just say, his rookie year he had four sacks. I think he had like he's average in his the year he won MVP. He only had like 15, 14, like
only.
But hold on. But hear me out. Guys like Von Miller. And those guys, or Dwight Freeney, or you go look at any great pass rusher, they trump his numbers aren't even sniffing the
but
great
they
pass.
Didn't play
but
run
Von Miller
as well as him,
and Von Miller had a complete D line to go with him.
Yeah,
like,
Von was opposite
Von
guy
Miller,
during
D-line
the market
left
players.
And got paid somewhere else. Mac doing everything on his own, getting chipped, and he's the only legitimate pass rusher.
Dot Hicks is on that front right now, and. I don't know, man. I just think I compared it to the summer blockbuster movie. When Avengers comes out, all you see in the previews, movie of the year, 100 million, you know, like they promote it like it's the best thing ever. And then you go watch the movie and you're like,
Man.
And granted, Seattle
Oakland would be 2-0 right now if they paid Khalil Mack.
What do you mean? I watched the movie and I was impressed. That was the best movie I had seen damn near ever.
Eddie, so, but Seattle gave up 6 sacks the week before too. Like that.
Look what he did against Green Bay.
But
against,
he did it against Kaiser. He didn't do any of that against Aaron Rodgers.
But what are you talking about?
His stats came against Kaiser.
They was in the first half.
You gotta also think he's still not in football shape yet. He still haven't been through training camp. He still haven't did OTA. So his football shake gonna start hitting around like
week. B, you just a guy who don't value defense, man. You a guy who values offense.
Who plays defense, which is crazy.
If I had the chance to pay this D lineman or a quarterback at this particular point, I had the chance to pay Kirk Cousins or him, I'm paying Khalil Mack.
Why you ain't keeping that Derek Carr or Khalil
Mack?
It
ain't even close. But, well, I'm just saying, because that's the highest paid quarterback prior to these other dudes.
But your boy Brandon said he would pay a pass rusher before he would pay a corner.
I would too.
I would second that. Absolutely.
And y'all are both corners.
NFL has gone to, like, they starting to run. They don't just play man no more. They run all these zone and exotic coverages. You can kind of hide your corners in the NFL now. And to me, the best pure man-to-man corners, they don't get the most recognition. It's a lot of zone corners that's getting all the recognition right now. And my thing is, if you're getting a pass rush, you can have an okay corner out there that look good. But you can have the realest corner out there on the island, and if the quarterback just sitting in the pocket waiting for all these deep routes to develop,
well, it can be a like long
that corner
day.
Go look average.
All right, yep. So let me ask you this. If they came to you, both of you, D'Angelo and Brandon, when y'all were in y'all prime and said, I'm not giving y'all this contract because I'm going to pay Ryan Kerrigan instead of you or Brian Arakpo or – you know what I mean? Like, come on, y'all.
No, I'd
have been like, all right, I'm going somewhere else. That's exactly. What going to pay.
No. D, but change the question. Change the question. What if they asked you to take a pay cut so they could keep this guy?
No, I won't take that either. It's a business. I'll just go somewhere else. But like, y'all want to pay him. But I understand. But I'll just go somewhere else and get the money I deserve.
But you see the irony in that, Eddie, is they both say they would pay the pass rusher when it comes to their money.
B, we ain't the corners you need to hide. That's why. We would lock us up. We not the corners we need to hide. We played with some cats that we would be like, you know what? He would show take a pay cut to be hidden and have a pass rush help him out.
Absolutely. But that's the thing. I want to hear you guys' opinion on how you would build, because there's multiple ways to build a team. I went back and looked at the last 10 Super Bowl champs, and I found that 6 out of the 10 didn't have a pass rusher.
This dude, Skip Bayless over there, where you get these numbers from?
Eddie,
I'm going to call him out. I ain't buying that.
All right, I'm going to go through
name him.
Right.
No, but wait. Before you name him, B Hill, what I told B Hill is, it's not like 8 Von Millers and Khalil Mack out there. It's only 2 or 3 of them in a whole league. So the teams that won a Super Bowl, of course they not go have them. It's only 2 of them in a whole league.
But let's
rushers wrecking the game like that.
But let's evaluate where they spend their money at. Go ahead, B. Go down the list. Do you
have your fake news?
So all right. So we're gonna start with New England.
You said the last 10.
New England.
New England's the exception to the rule. So, yeah, okay. Maybe the
that's
last
one.
Ten,
and they got Tom Brady up. And their defense got scores. All right, but go ahead.
They got 5 of them,
but
go ahead.
But you
got
to admit, there's multiple ways to win a championship.
What New England did, nobody has ever done before. Okay. Nobody has took the best quarterback in the game, and he's taken a pay cut that dramatically. Nobody has ever done that.
Okay.
Aaron Rodgers don't want to take 15 to 20 mil. He wants 35.
Okay.
All right. Eagles. Oh, the Eagles defense is come on, what?
Look at the D-line.
That's the only reason they made
sack fumble.
$140 million pass rusher on that front?
Man, Fletcher Cox, how much is his contract?
100.
Honey,
that's close enough, B. Let's
be
real
that's
here.
Up here though.
Let's be real here, B.
But Brandon,
come on, B.
Brandon, what did I tell you last night? You can do a lot with that $40 million.
He did say the extra $40 million puts it over.
Well, you know what?
But
who has a $140 million pass rush in the league besides Vaughn and goddamn Khalil? It ain't but 2.
But
so of course, ain't none of them gonna be on your list.
But what's the name too? Aaron Donald is getting.
I mean, he just got his bread,
it.
So
just
he can't,
got it.
I mean, yeah, he ain't on your list either. Obviously, the Rams they about to be there now.
All right, but there's not a $100 million edge rusher on the Eagles. Okay.
Von Miller was on the Broncos.
All right,
when
man. I just all said right. You had what's the name? I just said
Seattle.
Now,
Seattle.
You saying
Seattle
edge
front.
Rusher.
Seattle front.
Seattle front, they had all their money tied up in the front, to be honest. Well, not really the front, but the D and the front. They was paying Bennett a nice sum. They was paying Cliff Avery a nice sum. But that
crew, any of those guys,
that crew took less to be together, though. Man, yeah, that crew was game-changing. Okay. Man, that whole defense was on Hall of Fame status because they revolutionized the game. They the reason cats played cover three the way they played cover three. That's okay. Like Tampa 2. That's why Rondé Barber's going to be a Hall of Famer. That's why John Lynch is going to be a Hall of Famer. That's why Derrick Brooks is a Hall of Famer.
But
that's
why
Warren Sapp is a Hall of Famer.
Bro, they had one the way.
Revolutionized the game in cover two. Seattle did the same thing with cover three, man.
But you're talking about the secondary, D. You aren't talking about.
But I'm talking about the front, too. The front collectively, along with Bobby Wagner and Malcolm Smith and KJ Wright. Defense, they dumped all the money they had into that defense.
All those, because KJ
I'm just saying,
the
pass rush. Might not have been making 12 to 15 a year, but they were paid a lot of money. And
okay,
so that group took up a lot of money.
We could go all day with this, but I'm going to tell you what I saw last night. So Khalil Mack was getting pressure all game, which allowed the corners, the Russell Wilson, to get the ball out quicker. That allowed the corners to be able to squat on routes more, to sit on routes more. Next thing you know, Prince Amukamara got a pick six to seal the game, to win the game, right? So the only way that you could pay a guy like a Khalil Mack or Von Miller or Aaron Donald, you look at how they doing it, is they got a young nucleus, whatever. I probably said the word
nucleus,
wrong.
Yeah.
Nucleus, whatever. you look at Chicago, the whole defense is young. You look at the offense, everybody's young. You look at the Rams, everybody's young. You look at the Broncos when they paid Von. They had a bunch of younger guys out there so they could – pay that one guy.
Yeah.
Like, it. That's how you do it. Like, if you're going to pay one guy, you got to have a young team, which D-Hall hit on earlier with the Rams.
I 100% agree with that. I'm just saying, in Oakland's defense, they would have 30% of their money tied up in two people. You can't even – what can you build around?
But then they still old everywhere. Like, they old. So that wasn't a good – That's not the right way to do it. You got
exactly.
a bunch of old
so
guys out there making a minimum, and then you're going to pay.
Yeah, so they had to let him go. So
man, Khalil Mack is a generational type of player, man. I mean, you basically telling me Oakland's a place I don't want to be. Because you're basically telling me, as a great defensive player, I can aspire to be the best at my position, all-pro, winner NFL, defensive player of the year award. And you basically telling me no matter what I do, if you ain't paying your pass rusher, Who you gonna pay? Nobody. That ain't a place I want to be. That's basically what it boils down to, and that's not a problem. But
it's just more. It's
like
more
I
than one
draft the defensive player in the first two rounds. If that's the case, because I don't want him to be. I don't want him to pan out. If that's the case, because I'm not gonna pay him.
Yeah, or I mean, but everybody's hoping it's the same thing with Seattle. Like they knew they couldn't, keep paying Cam and Earl and Richard, and they couldn't pay that whole team. So you have a window with your organization to try and hit. And I think Oakland realized that they, with the way their team was constructed, they were out of that window. So it didn't.
But Khalil Mack, the youngest dude on it, like, he's younger than Derek Carr.
I understand that, but you already tied up the car, D. So if I get four
Man,
first
I ain't,
rounders,
I ain't married the car.
I know,
still got it.
But all you right. gonna trade Derek Carr?
I'd have traded Derek Carr before I traded Khalil Mack.
Yeah. I don't know if you can do that one now. Quarterback's hard to come by.
Me personally, if it was my team and I had to pick one, to be 100% honest, it would have never got to that. But yeah, I'm taking Khalil Mack. That's just me.
Right. But then you look at, all right, D, you're gonna end up being on the losing team, and you're gonna need draft picks, and you're going to hope you hit on a Mitchell Trubisky, or what I'm saying? Like, there's no guarantee you're going to –
Bro, Derek Carr was the second-round pick for me. Khalil Mack was the second overall pick.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. So, but, Nick Bosa coming out in the draft next year. Oakland will be able to get him.
Yeah, they probably – yeah, they will. And they'll have a chance.
Nick Chubb went top five this year. Like, there's always a pass rusher.
You can find a pass rush better whether
they turn out to be Khalil Mack. I don't even think Khalil Mack is the best. I think Von Miller is night and day better than Khalil Mack personally.
See, and I played with Von, and Von, one of the best athletes I've ever seen. Yeah, Von got wicked, dog. They different type of pass rushers. But I talked to a couple left tackles. I would always ask them that question. And it was split, bro. It was half and half. They was like, Von on third down, you didn't want to have to block him. You didn't want to see him. But they was like, Khalil Mack was every down you felt that way.
Yeah, yeah. I get that. Because Khalil Mack a big dude.
Yeah.
But the thing is, and the other thing I was saying, I don't want to keep harping on it, but, like, you know, I just went by the numbers. You know what I'm saying? Khalil Mack, he has 10 career turnovers created.
He got 10 this year.
No.
Fake numbers.
All right. B, your question was pass rushes. All right, you named three teams. You named New England, Denver.
No, I didn't name Denver. I named the Eagles.
Oh, yeah, Eagles. I'm sorry.
I'm putting Baltimore in that category because I don't think Terrell Suggs was in his prime when they went.
Hello, Nada.
You tripping, dog. Terrell Suggs, a Hall of Famer.
He's
still playing, man. And you talking about he wasn't in his prime then? He wasn't a dog then? He absolutely was a dog then.
Pro Bowl.
3-4 years
ago. He
was a Pro Bowler. But go ahead.
Come on, D.
Go ahead.
Who else? Sorry, I had to pull it back up.
Flowers, where you at, bro?
I'm like right here. I just can't believe you still
talking about that New Orleans team.
All right, New Orleans. Even though they was a zone blitz defense with Greg Williams, but go ahead.
That was it. Because everybody else, the Giants, Pittsburgh, Green Bay, the Giants again, they all had pass rushers. Denver. So, you know, it's
split. I mean, it's different ways to build a successful team, man.
Right.
But I just know me being a defensive guy, I'm always feel like defense wins championships.
Yeah. I just feel like I want Khalil Mack to be – I want him to strip fumble. I want him to intercept.
He did that last night. He had an interception week one for two games. Everything you asked him
for already. Talk about. But, he scored on defense. Go ahead.
No, because Eddie, all those things you named, sack. Deshaun Kizer gave him the fumble. Deshaun Kizer threw him the pick six.
What are you?
He had a strip sack against Russ.
He did.
Yeah.
Am I tripping? I thought he did that against Aaron Rodgers.
No, in two weeks he got four turnovers.
He didn't do that against Aaron. Aaron got hurt, and then Kizer came in and threw him the pick six, gave him the fumble.
Either way.
I know for a fact he stripped Russ.
Yeah, he stripped Russ, but Russ,
right?
Russ was playing. Russ is tripping right now because he's trying to do everything.
But you finding an excuse to discredit all this man turnovers, man.
No, like, well, I'm just saying, like, if Russ gave up six sacks week one, I mean, I think it's probably safe to say they're gonna be struggling on the offensive line all year.
That's not Khalil Mack's fault. You, I mean, that ain't his fault, right?
I mean, we can all agree to disagree. I feel my type of way about it. Y'all played in the league, so y'all have more credibility than I do. You know what I mean? But just in my opinion, I'm just like, I can't give a DN, a pass rusher 140, man. Like, sorry. Like,
there's only two of them that I'll give that, Von Miller and Khalil Mack. That's it.
Right. And Aaron Donald.
But you give a coach $100 million.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I'd rather pay Khalil Mack over giving a coach $100 million.
Yeah.
I feel a lot better about that.
That was part of the problem too. But if I told you you can rebuild your team and you got 140 in your pocket plus four first rounders.
I get that.
Are you like, shit, I'll take that 140. That's a lot of ammo and four first round draft picks.
I get it. Because if Khalil Mack get hurt, then you kind of.
That's
you hurt,
but Brandon made the point. He's never been hurt. He's always available, which is, you know, cool. But you never know what happens, man. Guys, Albert Haynesworth probably never got hurt till he got paid.
Nah, B, you right, but it's a simple thought. It's a simple fact that it never even should have got to that. So you telling me every team should potentially give up they start defensive player versus paying, like, it should have never got to that.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't see the Rams talking about moving Aaron Donald, franchising him, and then talking about trading him.
because he wanted too much money.
But you
saw the Rams like, all right, man, just playing this franchise tag. The next year, all right, man, we're going to get this deal done for you. And them getting the deal done. That's what an organization does. They take care of their
own. But you saw the Skins do that with Kurt.
And look, I don't necessarily agree
with the way they did it either.
Look what the Steelers are doing with Le'Veon. That's killing me.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's killing me right there. Like, all the work he didn't put in.
And
like, come on, man.
I'm absolutely on Le'Veon's side because Le'Veon's saying this. Why am I going to come in there week one? I'm going to get 400 touches. That's thousands of hits on me. And then y'all just going to let me go to somebody else beat up and with 400 carries in my pocket.
Like DeMarco
Murray.
Who
don't care enough about me?
Who's still like, well, he owes scraping it to, on a plate?
Man, I owe it to who's paying my contract. And right now, they ain't trying to pay my contract long term.
Yeah.
So, he going to come in week 10 and get the rest of his totes on the season, get his accredited season, and be an unrestricted free agent.
And Pittsburgh is just in a total mess of an organization right now. A lot of people say that Mr. Rooney was alive, this stuff would never be happening, but they're going through it.
You right. We done?
Yeah.
I'm going to put Flowers over there eating. I'm like, he's somebody still scraping the plate?
I'm
like,
not still scraping the plate.
It's been an hour. Still eating?
It's been an hour and a half. That's the thing. It's been an hour and a half.
I got stuff to do. But
I got kids.
I'm gonna cut that up into a separate segment, into like an NFL segment, so it won't.
We probably should talk Virginia Tech people in the NFL if we gonna do that. Maybe.
I mean, you know, you can talk NFL separate. You know, I think people want to hear y'all NFL insight too. We don't have to just. I mean, I was gonna ask about Kyle not getting his head around. I was gonna say Eddie. I mean, D Hall and Flowers. Y'all need to call him and tell him to look back.
That happens, bro. That happens.
But he got beat.
He was in great position.
He got beat.
He was in great position.
Look back.
I mean, I seen plays where he did look back. So you just don't know what he was thinking in that moment. Like, you know what I'm saying? You're not gonna play perfect out there on that island. Like, things gonna happen like that. So he good, man.
Just give him a call and tell him to look back, man.
He don't want to hear from me. You don't think his coach told him to look back? Like, he did it consistently. Then I tell him, like, hey, little bro, you got to get your head back early.
Granted, he got beat.
That happened to me before.
He got beat both weeks.
But I didn't see it. Granted, I didn't see it, so I can't comment on it. I literally didn't see it.
He got beat both weeks the exact same way.
Okay, I didn't see it, so maybe I got to watch it and then make the OG call.
Just watch it and just – he's in perfect position. He just never turns his head.
I got you. I'll check it out.
Yeah, so – but yeah, man, I appreciate y'all. Hopefully it won't be this hard to get you back on next week.
Eddie.
Yeah. All right, guys.
All right.
Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to This Is Home podcast featuring D'Angelo Hall, Eddie Royal, and Brandon Flowers.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.